Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code DKHOOPS. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code DKHOOPS, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The VC Show is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it, but you must be 21 or older.
The VC Show, let's go, doing the part with Roz. We got the sports on deck for our audience. Whether it's big news, hot topics, updates, straight facts, storytelling, breakdowns, or special guests. VC Show, let's go, it's time to turn it out. The VC Show, let's go.
Welcome to the VC Show, presented by Caesars Sportsbook on Omaha Audio. I'm Vince Carter, alongside you know who. Roz, go on with a Roz, what's going on? How are you? Where are you? What say you?
Hello, what's up, Vince? It's great to see your face, to be reunited with you. At the moment, I'm actually in the Bay. I'm in San Francisco. I'm going to be on sidelines reporting on the broadcast for the Warriors-Grizzlies game, which should be a goodie, you know? It's rivalry week. Whole lot of spicy games, although depending on who you ask, they might be different interpretations of whether or not the Warriors and the Grizzlies are even a rivalry.
Right.
Depends on who you ask. But I will say it's certainly spicy and exciting. And I can't wait for it. So I'm always happy to be back in the Bay, too. I mean, this is where, you know, a lot of my growth came as a professional, coming up as the Warriors sideline reporter back in the day and then playing ball at Stanford. So I've got a ton of, you know, people to catch up with, and it's always nice to be back in the Bay. What about you, DC? Where are you at?
You know, laying low, doing what I do. Nah, you know, back to work. You know, been on the move a little bit, but you know, back in the studio, getting it in. You know, so
I think you're leaving us out of the loop a little bit. I know you've been working on your golf swing. How was the LPGA tournament, Vince? Like, you were out there with the pros. What's going on?
Yeah, I got a chance to play in the Hilton Grand Vacations Tournament of Champions, the LPGA starter of the season tournament, which Brooke Henderson, for those who watch the women play, Brooke Henderson was killing it from start to finish. She was a runaway winner. But I got a chance to play with a lot of celebrities. I mean, from Fitzgerald, Larry the Cable Guy, Alfonso Ribeiro, Marcus Allen. I mean, yeah, exactly. you name it. It was who's who. Marty Fish, once again, won the tournament. Annika Sorenstam. There's a lot of great names in the business, whether it's sports, comedy, acting. I played with, who did I play with? I played with Victor Cruz.
Oh, nice.
Was there.
Okay.
Courtney Lee, one of my old teammates.
Fun.
So I got to play with Michael Pena, the actor. So I got to play with some pretty cool people, man, and obviously see some great golf. These women, you know, for those who watch golf, it's like watching men with the aggressive swings who hit the ball so far, but then watching the women just so fluid, easy does it, and they're straight down the middle every time. So I learn a lot. You know, it's just when you think you're a decent golfer, you play with a professional, play with these women, and it's like, man, if I can get that in my game, I'll be good. But I had a good time. Shout out to Kyle Lowry. I rocked the Legacy custom bag when we had him on here. You know, he made me the custom golf bag, so I rocked that. And shout out to the Tar Heels who sent me the team bag. So the first 2 days I rocked my Carolina bag, and then the last 2 days I rocked my Legacy bag. So it was turned some heads. It was pretty cool to have a cool bag that people enjoyed.
Oh, my goodness. That is star-packed. Of all of the celebrities and, you know, entertainers that were out there, where did you rank? Like, what's your game like?
My game is good on the K. I was up and down this year, but I'm decent. But, like, there's Derek Lowe, Marty Fish are two of the guys who are always every year up in the top. Marty Fish has won this tournament the last 2 years that I know, and he also won Tahoe. So he's on fire. He's a tough one to beat. I mean, he's beaten Tony Romo, who we know is a great golfer, Annika Sorenstam, who is currently the female GOAT who's still playing. Like, he's beating some of the great golfers that we know who are, you know, Annika is obviously the GOAT, the female GOAT, hands down, but he's beating people like that. He's a good player. So, I mean, it's just get the chance to get out there and play tournament golf, which a lot of people, you know, don't get that opportunity to play alongside some of the great ones. So, soon I'm going, I'm back in the lab, Roz, you know, and I'm taking this is my sport now. So, I'm getting with my coach and we're going to get back
at it. You got a golf coach, you're working at it. This is where you compete now.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like...
This is my competition, man.
I feel like when I talk to people about golfing, there's always some element of them saying it's a humbling experience, or I've learned more about myself than I ever had before. Like, you know, as someone who really was dominant in the game of basketball, what have you learned or taken away from, you know, golf?
Don't disrespect the game. It's always, you could play the same course twice and have a different result. You could play a course one day and play great and feel like, man, I got this. Like, I could do this every day and play that exact same course and it kicks your butt. Like, that's where people say it's humbling, because it's like, it's very technical. Like, if you get outside of what you need to do, club, hands, not in the right position, it's not like basketball where you can be off platform and shoot and still make a shot, you know, make 2, 10, 12 in a row. It doesn't work like that in golf. So it's kind of sticking to your routine. And it also teaches you patience. Playing in tournaments, you need patience. That's a big difference in playing like casual golf. And when you're not playing well, having patience and kind of zoning, locking back in, because it's not a team game where I can say, oh, I can give it to my other superstar, somebody else, and let them get it going until I get it back together. No, it's just you out there with a ball that's not moving. and you're trying to keep the ball in front of you, keeping it straight. I've played in a few, so it's not the nerves. It's just kind of just, it's just, you know, being able to translate the golfer that you are casually, translating that to actually performance, you know, to professional golf or tournament golf. And it's like a different sport. It's kind of, I compare it to preseason to playoffs. Maybe not regular season. Like, I look at casual golf. Like, you go play, people try to take it serious. I try to take it serious to prepare myself for that. But there's no preparing for that. But it's like, we try to prepare ourselves in the preseason, you know, whatever, like you kind of half-ass it, but you're really trying to get yourself ready. Yeah. But it's, and then you get to tournament golf. It's like the playoffs.
Yeah.
Every shot matters, you know, so that's why I skip regular season. It's like, yeah, you play every game matters to position yourself, but you know what the playoffs is like. And that's what I kind of compare it to.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it actually gives me goosebumps and just like listening to you talk about it. And you know, in a way, like the amount of time you spend, you know, alone with your own thoughts, you know, and your own your own progress, you know, and that each, you know, hole could be a different journey, and kind of letting go of, it's really a life metaphor, like letting go of what you can't control and moving forward.
Yes, you're exactly right. And that's kind of the thing. I could say that till I'm blue in the face, and then get out there in the course and you hit a shot that you feel like I can hit this shot. But that, you know, you have to kind of face the reality of, okay, this time you didn't, but don't carry that over to the next shot, because then you will have another bad result. And then people just blow up. That's when you see videos where people breaking clubs or throwing them in the lake and throwing them all around the course. And because you let, you know, bad shots kind of build, you know, it's kind of like, I mean, it's like basketball. And I try to take a lot of the situations of basketball mentally more so than physically and bring them on to the golf course.
Amen.
More so like, okay, you had a bad shot. All right, let's get the next one back in play and see it through.
Right. Well, one thing that I really don't think it's possible to see in golf that we can see on the basketball court is off court shenanigans spilling into the actual game or match, like that's me trying to do a like pseudo transition.
I see where you're going.
I know everybody watching at home was like, where is she going with this? Is she like tries to get us back to basketball? But I mean, the shenanigans are on a high. The NBA never fails to deliver. There's always something exciting. In fact, on my phone, I got a update from like ESPN or SportsCenter, or like, because I got sports alerts on my phone, normally reserved for like, you know, LeBron James has moved 50 up.
50 point game.
Yeah, 50 point game, or has moved up to number three all time, or it's a 2 point game with a minute left on so and so. Tune in now. It was Shannon Sharpe and T Morant, Ja Morant's father, were part of a situation that paused the Lakers Grizzlies game or whatever. And I literally looked at it and I was like, wait, what? And so then the aftermath of seeing him jawing with Steven Adams, Dylan Brooks in the locker room calling Shannon Sharpe a pedestrian or a blogger, or Shannon and T. Morant going at it. Then later, Shannon Sharpe and Ja's father, you know, showing love and dapping it up at the end. And then there were apologies, and then cardigan flexes and name drops of stylists. And I was like, wait, what? And in the midst of it, like, you know, like there was a battle on the court, LeBron James doing crazy things. And I was just like, this is nuts. So as of our conversation, Shannon Sharpe has given a full-bodied apology and really, really clearly took it seriously, gave an apology to everybody who was involved. Like, everybody got an apology. Janitors got an apology, everybody. And there has been nothing said from the Lakers organization or the league yet about whether or not there would be any repercussion for this. So just curious your take on the situation. And then, should Shannon Sharpe have been kicked out of the arena?
I mean, at that moment, I think, yes, it was a situation. Any situation like that, anybody else, they would have been removed. I mean, because it just wasn't back and forth and it was over. It continued with multiple players, then another fan, which was spilling onto the court. So, you know, I know Shannon, no team a little bit. You know, when Shannon is there, he goes there. That's the Sharpe family. I know both of the Sharpe brothers very well.
Amen.
And, you know, when they're in it, they're in it. You know, and you know, the one thing about it, like I said, I didn't see the game. I saw it kind of like what you did on the ticker. I'm like,
what?
What does that say?
I was like, what?
Lakers, T. Morant, like these, wait a minute, Shannon Sharpe, T. Morant, Dylan Brooks, what is going on? So, You know, I mean, I know a lot of other players had a lot to say. You know, at the end of the day, if it was any fan, we want them removed.
If it was any person, a fan in the arena, they could have gotten serious bans. They could have gotten reprimanded. I mean, the NBA has been actively trying to curb negative behavior from fans to players.
For good reason.
For their safety.
For good reason. And for players, like they say it all the time, it's like, okay, you're going to allow these fans to come in and talk junk to us, but then you're going to fine us for protecting ourselves or whatever the case may be. So now the NBA is kind of taking onus on, you know, well, I mean, they do have a point. You know, you're going to leave these guys out there for dead and then fine them?
Right.
No, you can't. It doesn't work like that, in my opinion. So, the NBA didn't fine any player in this group.
No, I haven't seen that.
Because that would be disappointing if so. You have back and forth with players. You know, Russ had a back and forth with his own fans in L.A., you know. So it happens. Once they walked him out, I don't think
he should have been allowed back in. And that's not even in
not back in after that. That's all I'm saying. Maybe not right.
And that has nothing to do with his legacy and respect for all that he has accomplished. You know, when you have this conversation, suddenly people want to bring up what somebody did. Like, that's not any disrespect to that or lack of acknowledgement. It's just, you know, it's just the nature of how things move on a game day and respecting the space. You and I, Vince, talked about the sacred ground of locker rooms, of courts, and, you know, look, in the aftermath of seeing everything go down, like I actually was cool at the end with just about how everything played out with, like when I saw, it gave me a chuckle and a little bit of like, oh, he's trying to play, when like Dylan Brooks was like, Shannon Sharp is a pedestrian, or that, you know, he's a blogger. You know, it went viral on social media, and we all got a chuckle out of it. And there definitely was some thought of like, okay, young man, you know, you might be being a little bit disrespectful. But on the other side, you know, it was the space and the sanctity of it respected. And that's his, that's their art. That's their safe space to come out there and play the game of basketball and be professionals. That's their workplace. You know, we don't go to a duck.
Which he understands.
Right. So just to let me finish, like, so I felt like it comes with the territory of how everyone was stepping in line. And then in seeing the aftermath of it, I really appreciated Shannon's apology. I thought Shannon Sharp came on his show and gave a lengthy apology. Some people might have said it hadn't even been too long, but you could tell he took it serious. He gave a great example of what owning your actions looks like. And really, I mean, sincerely, it felt very heartfelt. Probably went home, looked at it, felt, you know, and just, you know, wasn't pleased with how he was showing up in that moment. And so in the aftermath, I'm like, all right, cool. You know, like I'm over. There's nothing more I'm going to say to Shannon Sharp after that. Move on, because I thought it was thorough and we got caught up.
And you could tell he thought that through. He thought of the people to actually apologize to. It wasn't a generic apology. It was apologizing to individuals. I think, like I said, I think he should have been, you know, should not have been allowed to come back. It happened. He saw himself. He thought it through. Like I said, he was in the moment. And he did not let this situation linger. Like I said, it was the next day he issued that apology, where people be like, all right, cool. He saw, you know, he was acting the fool and how it all played out. I'm sure he heard immediately, you know, how social media is. He heard immediately, you know, likes and dislikes and what people had to say, and then thought it through. Like, man, no, he obviously, the organization, his family, friends, kids, so forth, like he understood on his platform, and he used his platform for good.
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, back at Dylan for what he said. No. Yeah, he said, you know, I thought that was, you know.
I think he probably put himself, and from what I gathered, like, it was a very humble apology where he recognized, like, yo, it's these young guys' time. Like, he wasn't lost in ego. He could have easily came on his show and, you know, not, you know, listed credentials and been like, okay, young man, I know a blogger, I know pedestrian, you better be careful. But he didn't do that. Instead, he complimented the young guys and just recognized it's their time right now, and that was their stage. And so I thought that was commendable. A lot of adults, a lot of us grown people get lost in the ego, and Shannon Sharpe didn't do that. And I do think it was important, you know, LeBron stepped up and immediately had a, you know, had his back afterwards, even though it sounded like he was, you know, jokingly doing it. Any word of LeBron's allows there to set a tone that, look, I'm with Shannon, you know, like, I got his back, you know, that's my guy. Let's not go crazy.
Well, I'll say this. I just want to say this to that, what you said is that I'm glad he didn't go listing the accolades and credentials, because I don't think he would, it would be accepted that he'd win, or people would say, oh, okay, cool, move on. Like you said, he issued a thorough apology and moved on. Listing those accolades, I think that would rub people the wrong way, and he's digging a deeper hole. So I thought he handled it well. He did what he had to do, and it's kind of like healing and move on. I mean, some people are going to accept it, some people aren't. That's just the way it is. But I thought he did the right thing regardless.
Okay, well, let's move on from that topic into another one. Speaking of accolades, I know a guy with a whole lot of them, and that's Tom Brady. And I know that's your guy with the Bucks. Oh, my gosh. So the latest quote to come out with Tom Brady.
You see,
I know we're going to talk basketball, but let's do a quick football. I mean, this is barely even sports-centric. Tom Brady is a universal conversation. This is a conversation about life, longevity, and how hard it is to move to
play in the 40s,
to do anything in the 40s. Sure,
right.
Not that I've been there, but or even to like think about your identity after be existing in one way for so long. And I'd love to see, do you think in a little way, is Tom struggling with who he would be without football? Because, and I'll just, his latest, you know, headline quote was, he did an interview and basically came out and said, look, if I knew what I was going to effing do, I'd have already effing done it. Okay? I'm going to take it one day at a time.
That's a real thing. I've been there. Like, as I was leading up to, you know, let's just say two, three years out, even my last year prior to my conversation with Kobe in Jersey, that was kind of my hesitation. And I won't say a fear, but that was kind of what was uncomfortable for me. And it was tough for me to say the word retirement. And it's like, okay, what's the other side look like? Because for 22 years, I had this routine, and this is all I focused on, is to be the best that I can be, the healthiest I can be, you know, make other guys better, all of these different things that culminates who I wanted to be and where, you know, what I love doing. And somebody could say that same thing to me, and I would not admit that. And I don't think Tom would either, because like I said, he's just trying to figure this all out, because it's like, okay, this is all I've done. This is all he's done. Like for 22 years, I came in the league at 21. And I played for 22.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? You know, so I played more than half of my life in this sport. So that's all I know. And it's kind of like walking on the other side. And, you know, like I was reassured. Like Kobe, you know, one of the guys I respected, Dirk and D-Wade were like three guys that I kind of respected.
Are you saying Kobe?
They were retired.
Okay.
Yeah, Kobe. Yeah. Yeah, so when he, you know, I figured they're fierce competitors who gave it all, put hours and hours into their craft to be Hall of Famers that they're going to be, you know, I'm talking about Dirk and D-Wade. I trusted what they had to say. In the brief conversation I had, because the first guy I really talked to was Kobe, and listening to him talk and just say, hey, you will enjoy this. Life is good. It's okay over here. The water's great. And I was like, man, of all people, we know how Kobe was about his regiment and his preparation and how he viewed the game. And to hear him say that. And I was like, you know what? I'm retiring. Yes, retirement. retirement. And I think that's what, and I say, I'll say all that to say, I think that's what Tom needs. It's just reassuring that, you know, I mean, we're all different. We all handle our, have different lifestyles, but it's like people that you respect and that are fierce competitors. I think somebody like Peyton Manning would be great for him to talk to, who had the same approach and, you know, a GOAT and accomplished so much and not, everything was football and being the best at it. I think sometimes it's tough to go. But I was at that game. I was at the game, and it was tough to watch. But, you know, it just – I don't know. It just didn't seem right. We just – and I say we, my Bucks, we just did not look good. And, you know, I want to say something real fast, you know, and I said this to a couple of my friends, and I think I said my mom a couple of – you know, I'm in my new life, in this new world of mine, on the other side as a fan, like, and I say I was a fan before, like going to football games, but now that I'm not playing and look at life, I struggle. I struggle with like being at games and like people boo, but it's just like, you know, kind of some of the things you hear home teams say about their home team when things go bad. I'm over there losing my mind. It's just a different world and I'm just trying to get used to it. Now, I just wanted to say that because I thought about that. Why, and, you know, I'm a fan too. I'm like, what? Tom, what are we doing? You know, but then at the same time, that basketball player, that athlete's like, I would say what? Y'all come out here and just try one play. One play. And you tell me how you feel. You know, it's just like you, you know, when people play pickup with athletes and they look at guys who they don't respect, what do they say? Hey, bro, who is this guy? He playing the NBA? Dang, he's good. Yeah, just because they don't play, that doesn't mean they're not good. So, I mean, I know I'm kind of going off left field, but it was I wanted to say that because sometimes I sit out there and I just look around and just listen to people, and I'm just like, man, this is tough. I need earplugs.
It's really a lack of empathy, again, for, you know, athletes and entertainers. And honestly, it really shows a lack of experience. You know, if somebody actually, you know, knew what it took or even knew what it took to exist on the court, on a, you know, JV level, you would understand, like, dang, just even being there, you know, being the last guy on a team, like, that's hard.
Mm-hmm. But, Raj, you said it. You said it, but people don't understand. You said to even function and move about at that level in the 40s is what Tom Brady's doing. Like, so, I said to people, like, when you wake up in the morning, people who are 40 or older, you don't feel great. And you can't imagine having to go jog, not play a contact sport, just to go jog or work out sometime. Like this guy does this every day. So it's just
a lot.
You know, we tend to forget that because we're because of our fandom.
Right.
And that's
I mean, also, I mean, it's comparable, but it's also not the same. Like Tom, you know, could be putting close to $1 million a year into his body. You've got, you know, full facilities and teams dedicated to making sure you're maximizing the best level of your talent and ability. You know, Joe Schmo is waking up out of bed and probably, you know, warming up a breakfast sandwich, you know, or, you know, making an espresso coffee, you know, like, so yeah, it's comparable, but it's not. But one thing that was interesting was listening to you talk about Kobe giving you advice on like, hey, the water's cool over here in retirement. It's interesting. You know, I really got to know Kobe towards the end of his career. Like, that's when I was starting mine and really in his retirement year. And I definitely got to know him more around women's basketball because he was very serious with Gigi and, you know, starting to really immerse himself. And, you know, one thing about him is he had a blossoming, growing, big family of girls, you know, to throw himself into and really focused on being like Mamba mentality of fatherhood. And in some ways, like, you know, he was competing to be the best, you know, coach of the teams, of his daughter's team, the best father he could be. Like, it was just same beast, different, you know, animal in some ways. And I wonder what that would be. For Tom, I mean, he certainly has a family, right? What was that for you? Like, and I'm going to, before I even, I'll further set that up, like, I definitely speak to coaches on the NBA scene, assistant coaches, things like that, who have talked about how after retirement, you know, it's hard from going, you travel for 82 games a year, you're barely at home, you're used to, you've got your routine for maybe 10-year career, you're going to dinners, you know the hotels, you've got your playing life, and then all of a sudden you retire and suddenly you're supposed to know how to function being in your home for 7 days a week. Like, I know that for the everyday person, you're like, what? That's cold life, sir. But for somebody who spent years not existing in that way,
our life was totally different.
So what is that adjustment like?
Well, I want to say this, so you go back to Kobe, and I'm going to move my way forward through that. You said something about him, about his daughters and enjoying. That's one of the things he said in that conversation. When he said his excitement, he said, I love retirement, and I love now that I can focus on and attack, you know, this thing of fatherhood and understanding how important fathers are to their daughters. And he's like, we need to, you know, to do that. We've been here, been in this life, you know, that, but we need to kind of take channel our energy to that. And I was just like, golly, man, you're right. You know, we're going to have further conversation about that. But, you know, it's listen to you say it. I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what he was saying. So, you know, and I think that was, I was lucky as far as retirement, because I told you, I wasn't sure what the other side looked like. And I was fortunate enough, believe it or not, that when the pandemic hit and it was a stoppage and everything happened, and once it was kind of confirmed that 22 of the 30 teams were going to the bubble and I was a part of the 8 that did not go, it was easy for me because the pandemic happened and I kind of can transition out and find another focus, which I had golf. So golf is my competition now. That is my challenge. That is my sport, you know. So that I started kind of putting my energy in that. And then obviously now working with ESPN and doing all that, I started doing some TV work while the bubble was going on. I started doing some work, some studio stuff. And it helped ease my transition. Everybody does not get that opportunity for it to kind of fall in place like that. And it fell in place. So when the reality set, when that season was over, I was already in the if you would, regular life for me. You know, now kind of routine of, you know, doing TV and, you know, a little studying and, you know, how everything goes into that. And then golf, like I needed something to kind of challenge the mind and the body. You know, like for me, I just needed something. I couldn't just sit there and like, all right, turning competition off after 20 years, impossible. Impossible. So I had that. I mean, that was already kind of established, so it made it easier. And, you know, I can continue because it was a love of mine anyway. So for Tom, I think that's kind of the thing. He has to figure that out because he's a great golfer. He has golf. Obviously, he has TV waiting for him. So he has some things, but it's kind of still having to accept that, understanding like, okay, I have that. I'm ready to go to that. You have to let go, and that's the biggest thing. Something's going to have to trigger him or help him accept that life on the other side. Kobe's conversation, then I had the conversation with Dirk, then I had the conversation that summer with D. Wade, which confirmed, you know, kind of reconfirmed that really everything that I was already feeling. Yeah. See? I feel it again. Yeah, this is the right thing. This is the right decision. I said that I was retiring. And Roz, I honestly wasn't sure if that was the right decision. I did not know until, you know, after it was over and then the pandemic hit and I was like, this is the easiest way. This was the easiest way to kind of walk away from it personally.
How would you say your second chapter is going as far as similarities and differences and fulfillment?
It's going great. I don't have any anxieties, which I was kind of worried about, the anxieties of walking away from this game. And is golf enough to fulfill that competition? Is doing TV, which I love doing, enough, you know, where I'm not miserable? Because that thing, more than anything, I just didn't want to be miserable. And I wanted to be tolerable around my friends and family. You know, I didn't want to be that, man, this dude is just, go back, you know, because miserable. Tom was miserable when he retired. Like, it's okay. It's okay to say, Yeah, I retired. And I thought that was going to be me. I retired and like, hey, nah, this is not it yet. But the pandemic.
Right.
I think if we finished that season, I don't know. I might have been in that same situation fighting with the end. I think that's just a real thing because we're talking about somebody who played 20 years, you know, that's a lot of basketball. That's not our routine. It's like, you can't just go cold turkey.
Right.
You know,
but if Tom, were to retire again, there's no coming back from that a second time around.
I think if he announces it this time, he should do it. He should be sure.
He should take his time.
Yeah. Which I think what you said about the effing this and effing that, and I'm going to do it when I'm done. I'm taking it one day at a time. I think he really means that this time.
All right.
You know what I'm saying? Because of what happened before. Because of before.
And we should respect that space as someone who has journeyed and done so much for all of sports, not just the game of football.
The VC Show. Let's go.
Have you been betting with the Caesars Sportsbook and Casino app? If so, keep it up because every bet earns with Caesars rewards. That means win or lose, you're getting closer to amazing perks like game tickets, free stays, bonuses, and more. And if not, well, when you get started, your first bet is on Caesars. Register with promo code OMAHAFULL and place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, congrats. If you don't, you'll get your stake back as a free bet. Must be 21 or older, offer valid, and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Michigan, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming only. New users and first $10 plus wager only. Must register with eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss. Maximum bet credit $1,250. Must be used within 14 days of receipt. Tier credits and reward credits will be added to account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See Caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem, Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER. 1-800-426-2537. Or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NEW YORK or text HOPE-NEW YORK 467-369.
All right, Vince. So just keeping the conversation and the family and the energy of longevity, we've got another huge longevity topic heating up. I mean, it's been rumbling all season, but here we are at, you know, the pinnacle, a moment that's soon coming and will happen, you know, health allowing. LeBron James on the heels of passing Kareem for the all-time scoring leader in the history of the NBA. And actually, Ramona Shelburne did a nice write-up, and she had a conversation with Pat Riley, who had a conversation with her about Kareem. And longevity, and she spotlighted Kareem at age 38, I think in year 17 or so, and kind of took a look at, you know, where he was at that point in his career. And then here we are at LeBron, age 38, year 20 in his career. Both were high performers, still, you know, elite, top of the league type players in their older age. And Pat Riley actually said in the interview, he said, "I always said that Kareem was the greatest player of all time because of his longevity." So as LeBron approaches his all-time scoring record, and as someone yourself who has played 20 years, how do you look at the longevity conversation and how greatness is evaluated, and specifically what both Kareem and LeBron were able to do?
The fact that LeBron is able to do what he's doing at this age, year 20, is amazing. It's a testament to his dedication to the game, just like Kareem. And coming into the NBA, it's funny. I remember, I don't know why I remember this so vividly, but I remember scoring my 20,000th point, saw that graphic. And, you know, when you score 20,000, you sit at home like, oh, it's cool. It's on SportsCenter. You know, you receive the ball and you're like, okay, hopefully I can get to such and such. You just see some names. And then you get up to that top three. And like, it was Karl Malone up there, MJ. And then it was like, it was nobody. You know, it was just like, what? 30 what? Man, okay, cool. And you start seeing more guys hitting into 30,000. I remember I was on the team when Dirk did it. And it was just like, golly, that's amazing. That's amazing. You know, the guys, you know, another guy. Because, you know, you just 30,000 is a lot of points. Then you look at, when you say that, and then you look at Kareem like, yeah, there's nobody going up there. And when LeBron passed Carl, I was like, wow. You know, still like, bro, like he has a long way to go to get there. And now, like, we're like 400, you know, somewhere in there. Let's say less than 500 points away from history. Like, you know, you say records are made to be broken. Yes. But that's one that people, I think a lot of people thought, like, you have to play a long time to beat that. And you have to score a lot of points. And, you know, LeBron can score, but people didn't consider him that. And he's able to do that, you know, and, you know, it's just like, okay, and I can already see people now. So that makes him the greatest player. Whatever. He's one of the greatest athletes of all time. He's shattering records. He's living proof. You know, and I feel that I put myself in this category with those guys who played in a 40. They're showing that regardless of what your age is, you put your mind and you dedicate your mind and your body to it, you can accomplish it, you know. And that doesn't have to be a sport. Like, people just want to walk again or walk normal and be pain-free. And it takes a lot. It takes a lot, because I remember every summer after the season's over, I'm proud. You know, I was proud about where I am, and I want to compete against the new wave of young guys coming in. So I couldn't really exhale like, all right, 2-3 weeks, I'm gonna take off. It couldn't be that, you know, and that was like something I was okay with. And he's taking that to another level. And I, you know, what Kareem and you know, I think about what Kareem has accomplished, who he is. I've had the chance to interview him and talk with him and listen to him talk. My dear friend Bill Russell, listening to him talk about Wilt, Kareem, some of the greats that he's played against, and our generation, young and younger, of course, just we don't have an appreciation for what he did. I mean, you know. He scored this many points on a skyhook, on 2-point shots in free throws.
Yeah,
like that's saying something. Like, you know, we look at the evolution of the game, and it's nothing against that. I don't care what it is. 30,000 is 30,000. 38,000, whatever is what it is. But Kareem did it from 2-point shots,
right?
Mostly a skyhook and free throws. Not 20 something years. Like, it's just amazing. And I think sometimes, you know, we have the GOAT, the greatest player debate, and we typically hear obviously MJ and LeBron, should be Kobe in that. Kareem deserves to be talked about, and he'll never, and I get it, I'm a realist, he'll never be talked about. But when we actually sit down and think about how he got his points, and you look at LeBron, how he's evolved with the 3-point shot and the distance now that he's shooting. When he came in, you would live like we're living. Please shoot that. Now you can't. Now you can't do that with LeBron, and that wasn't the case with Kareem. It's like, how do we stop this guy? We have to follow him.
Right.
We don't let him shoot the skyhook. We make him shoot free throws. Right. You know, and he's a decent free throw shooter. So it's just these two guys. Those two guys are what they've done. And LeBron is doing,
yeah,
is amazing, and you know, I can't wait to see. I see our producer said it was 224 points. I mean, like, that's not a lot at the clip. I mean, and he's scoring 40 balls. It's not like he's getting 15, 20. He's not getting 15, 20, maybe 130 game. He's getting 40s right. and 45s and 47s. Right. Like, you know, it's just what LeBron is doing. He is setting the bar like any, you know, you could dedicate yourself to it. Like we talked about, you said it, Tom Brady has a team of guys and he's putting millions of dollars into his body. I know Russell Wilson has said he's put at least $1 million into his body. I mean, I know some people like, bro, you can't use that example because he didn't have a great year. Okay, fine. But it's the dedication, your willingness to put the money back into right. yourself to be the best player that you can be. And we're seeing what that does for LeBron.
Yeah, so, for sure. It's an investment. And you speaking in all of that, it speaks to the complexities of discussing what makes an all-time great journey and then a best player or greatest player of all time. And so, you know, you talk about the different types of shots these guys got, also the different styles of play, the different, you know, ways competition looked in the league. And that's what also adds complexity to these conversations. What era were you in? Who did you compete against? What was there a three-point line? You know, how was scoring? How was defense? And for someone who had a career as great as you did, how do you feel about the conversations of comparison over eras? How is that from a player's perspective? How fair is it?
I think it's unfair to all of these players because I think we have to decipher, okay, what rules are we going to play by? And, you know, in a young person or older person, depends on what side of the conversation or debate you're on, you can say, well, that's not their problem. Okay, that's fine. That's fair. But I will say this. I think about, let's just this ballpark, MJ averaged 30-ish. And we remember what that era was like, Bad Boys and all that. He averaged 30 when they weren't really calling fouls, touch fouls and all that. Now, just imagine putting guys like Iverson, even early Kobe, like guys in that era. We're talking about back in that day who didn't really get the call. Like they had to earn no blood, no foul type mentality. When we walked in, that's what referees would say. Are you bleeding? Well, quit crying. That's kind of what it was. So I just think you take those guys who used to take a beating and average those numbers, put them in that game today. And what would it
right,
be like
right. for
them? You know, do you add 5, 10 more points to their average? That's insane. On top of the free throws, these guys who are great free throw shooters. So that's my only argument. I'm not saying, you know, you're looking at some of the most athletic beings, players today. It the game does look different. You look at the game, if you watch the game back in the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s, which you'll see me in there, and then you'll actually see me in the 2000s. You just look at the game. You see more physical back in the day. You see guys who are just kind of built to last below the ground first. I mean, you had high flyers, but guys, I mean, you had to fight your way through the paint just to get open. Now you're worrying about getting dunked on because everybody's aerodynamic now. Everybody's athletic to a degree, which, you know, is different, like more skilled. We're looking at, like, we're talking about Wembanyama coming in. We're talking about Bobo. You know, we're talking about 7-footers. You look at the Orlando Magic. We talk Jonathan Isaac. He's coming back. Comes back shooting threes. Big catch and shoot threes. You're looking at that lineup, Franz Wagner, 6'10". Bancaro, 6'10", you know, Wendell Carter, 6'11", and then Bobo. Like, you have, like, look at what we're talking about. We're talking about 6'10 guys who are playing small forward. Okay. I mean, shooting guard, small forward, probably, you know, handle. So it's just, yes, you could say, well, you had some guys back then. It's just a different game, but I just, like, I always say, what rules are we using?
Right.
And then we incorporate that, and then we'll see where we're going. But, you know, it's never – it's tough to compare. Like, how can you compare until you get those guys on the court at the same time? Which will never happen.
It absolutely is hard. I couldn't agree with you more fully. I think that's just the nature of the business of media and also the fun of being a sports fan and, you're in barbershops, and also sharing the game and the passion for it across generations between a mother and her daughter, a grandfather and his grandson, you know, sharing the players that touch them. And so, but I appreciate your awareness that a comparison across eras is not really complete or even fully fair to either side. Just real quick on the LeBron thing, like, you know, when he, and if health willing, he will pass Kareem. When he does him becoming the all-time leader in scoring for the NBA, does that change anything about how you would rank LeBron or even his legacy for you? Or what does that mean to you for LeBron?
It's tough. Like, I don't think it would change. That's a tough one. I mean, I don't think it changed. I still think what MJ was able to accomplish, how he accomplished it, is, you know, puts him right there. And I think MJ's right. LeBron is right there with him. You know, I think Kobe is there. I don't understand why we talk about MJ and LeBron and don't really mention Kobe. Personally, I just don't. I think those three. You know, it's you do a poll. And you see what you have. I mean, because you're gonna have a younger era gonna probably pick LeBron, maybe Kobe. And if they don't, you know, they didn't watch MJ. You can watch film or watch TV, and some people are not impressed when you watch TV as opposed to seeing it live. That's just the reality. And I think if people got the chance to see MJ live, woo-wee, man, it was tough. You see Kobe live. So I think it just solidifies. There's not many people better than LeBron James.
Period.
That's just, I mean, I just think that's what it is. I mean, I think, you know, older generation, I think we kind of, and I put me in that. I still roll with MJ first. I think the greatest athlete. Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing, you know, we're seeing a machine at work in his late 30s in year 20. And I don't know if a lot of us, you know, you see, there's no way I could play like he's playing at that age. I mean, so, and I don't think any of those guys, like the Kobe's, maybe Kobe, somewhat similar. I mean, but Kobe was breaking down too. His body was breaking down. MJ's body was breaking down. So it's a testament to LeBron, and you have to give him his just due. Not taking anything away from him. It's just, you know, I like what I like, and it's nothing.
And the conversation around LeBron is not just one of longevity. It's also one of durability. LeBron has missed only 165 games in his career in 20 years, and 94 of those happened in the last five seasons. So, I mean, you know, for the 15 years, this guy was like a tank. And that also shows a passion for the game. Sometimes the more I spend time in the league, I love to meet guys who love the game. But there are a number of guys who, you know, this is their profession. They make money. They are good at basketball, but they may not, you know, necessarily have a hunger or desire to be on the court. And now that we involve analytics and different types of strategies to monitor the body, guys are just missing more time. LeBron has been out here playing games.
That's what I was going to say to you.
Well, playing the games, not like, playing games.
Yeah. No. I got you. That's what I was going to say to you. It's like load management. You know, I wonder, I'm curious, I mean, obviously you got to add into some of that, how many times where he was a healthy scratch for load management on top of that. So it just says a lot about, you know, what
he's been
done,
very
so.
Durable, but I mean,
what
you know,
doing.
The conversation today, it's been interesting. We've been talking about records, legends, longevity, keeping in that same energy. And speaking of records, there's somebody else coming for the record book and coming for you. Actually, and that's Damian Lillard. You know, one of the just most fun players to watch, especially in crunch time. Mm-hmm. And Dame is about to pass you, Vince Carter, on the all-time three-point list. Vince, you're currently sitting at sixth place at 2,293s, and Dame is right behind you with 2,283 at seventh place. So, I mean, again, health willing, Dame is about to pass you. But what are your reflections on this and of Dame, you know, just his overall game?
Well, Well, for me, I think when people hear that, they're like, man, wait a minute. I didn't know you were up there in threes. Like, yeah, I did shoot them. You just, that's not what they were looking for. So I understood it. For Dame, I think he can beat that in one game. I mean, he's capable of going 8 for 9, like at the drop of a hat, or 8 for 12. The way the game is now, and we talk about Steph's ability to shoot the ball from long, long range, and you add Damian Lillard to that, and you look at the type of guy he is and what he was willing to accept and what he wasn't willing to accept. And, you know, it was easy for, you know, everybody wanted to push him to going somewhere else because Portland's not there. And he's like, no, I'm going to make it here. I want guys to come to play with me. But he's established himself as a perennial all-star. It will be a Hall of Fame. So I got to talk with him in you know, a little bit at the Olympics. And it was just each game was just some pretty cool conversations, kind of getting to know him. Yeah, and we're just sitting there kind of waiting for the game and just chop it up. And so I have a great appreciation for him. And I can say, you know, for him to pass me, first records are made to be broken, and he's a guy that, you know, I have a lot of appreciation for on and off the court. So, you know, I'm trying to hold on for this for maybe 1, 2, possibly 3 games, and then it'll be cool to kind of see.
I don't even think he'll make it 3 games, hey, man.
I'm trying. Hey. Sixth place for me, it's like for people, for, you know, people always obviously consider me a dunker and, hey, he can score, but they didn't say he's a 3-point shooter. Holding on 6 is like,
really impressive. And I think that's a testimony.
Hey, I'm happy to, I'm in the top 10.
Absolutely. People think of you as a high flyer. It shows that, you know, your game evolved to much more than being just athletic. You were highly skilled too. And also evolved your game. So that is really telling. So first of all, I want to congratulate you for being like a renaissance man in the NBA. Thanks. You really like an NBA renaissance man, for real. All right, last topic. I know I'm pushing it here. I'm going to give you a quick hitter, but it's been reported the dunk contest, All-Star Weekend is around the corner, and they're reporting that contestants may include Mac McClung, Shaedon Sharpe, and KJ Martin. And while those are exciting high flyers, We still are not hearing the big names. You know, people want to hear Ja Morant and Zion. Vince, why are NBA superstars, why aren't they competing in the dunk contest anymore?
Well, first of all, there's got to be one more. If there's only 3 guys, that's disappointing. Meh. And not a 4th. But I've seen Mac. Interesting. He has some stuff to him. Shaedon Sharpe can fly.
I'm not knocking it all. I was just saying like that. I don't know why I think
the fear of, and you can feel that, you feel it in. I think it's the fear of what is said if they don't win. I'm gonna speak about me. That was a dream of mine. Like I grew up watching it, wanting to be a part of it. I wasn't scared of the result, but I wanted to compete against the best. Like, I mean, and if they didn't find, but whoever was out there, I wanted to compete against them and show the world what I could do, more so than anything. And I think sometimes, I would watch the dunk contest throughout the years. I was approaching that like it was a basketball game. Like I was focused on the task at hand. And I don't know where other guys are with that. Like I had like these boys about to see what it really is today. Like that's kind of like, you know, I had to force T-Mac to stay in it. He was like, oh, I'm dunking for second place and all that crap. Meanwhile, I'm like, bro, I know your competition. And I know seeing you out there is going to push me to the next level. He didn't see it that way. But that's how I look at it for competition. You know, it was fun, but I was there for business on Saturday. It was a fun trip. All-star weekend is what it is. At that time, it was only 3 days, 4 days. It's not like it was like it is now. We didn't get it like that. It was literally Friday, Saturday. You get there Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That's it. Monday, you had to be back in your city. It's not, you know, so it's a little different. So I knew I was going to, you know, enjoy all the flight there. Cool. Oh, can't wait. Friday night, you do all the meetings. Ooh, okay. Saturday, when I woke up, it was business. It was business for me. Like, it was like, I just wanted to live in the moment and I didn't take it for granted. I didn't want to make a career of it. If you know what I'm saying, I didn't want to see me year after year after year, like, you know, but I was coming there to do my thing and signing off. So I think you know, now that with social media and the brand, I think people feel like they take a hit if they don't win it. But it's like, if you're dunking against the best and you put on the show, somebody's got to win, somebody's got to lose. But you can look at it like LaVine and Aaron Gordon, like that was like legendary. Going back and forth, where after each one of them dunked, you're like, oh yeah, he won. And then after the other guy dunked, you're like, oh yeah. Like you look at MJ and Dominique, you're like, oh no, he won. Oh wait a minute, nah, bro, I think he won. Like if you can walk away. If you can walk away saying that, like that's what it is, but it's just different, and I respect it. Let me stop by saying this. Stop now and say that I respect these guys and their decision for whatever their reasons may be. I respect it. I don't understand it, but I respect it, and I think, you know, they display unbelievable athleticism, and maybe some guys are afraid, you know, and you know maybe they're not. I'm just saying maybe. Are hesitant. Let me. Maybe some guys are hesitant about being in a contest because there's game dunkers and there's contest dunkers, and we can see guys who are flying in the air doing some stuff in the game that do not feel comfortable in the dunk contest. We may think so, but they don't, and that's a real thing. That is a real thing. Believe it or not, there's a lot of guys I know that like, we'll go dunk. Like, yeah, man, let's have a dunk off. Let's have a dunk contest. Like, But if we casually dunk and you put them in the game, they give you everything you want. You know, it's just weird. It's like, I don't know. That's all I got for that.
That is such an interesting insight, like, that I wouldn't have even, like, you know, that we may not have considered. So, obviously, your opinion.
The anxiety is... Anxiety's a dunking, maybe.
Right. I guess no, like you know, some people. That's a real thing. Serious, man. For real.
Anxiety's a dunking.
Dunking doubts. Doubts of dunking.
Ooh. Yeah, because it's a real thing.
No, for sure. I actually could see a whole marketing campaign about it. But see, anytime there is a conversation around dunking, we want to hear from you. And as we get closer to the All-Star weekend, we'll absolutely be diving in deeper. But you know, I think we're coming full circle on our show here. We kept you a little extra long, but we had a lot of big names and big topics to hit today.
Good stuff. Yeah. And but Roz, I will say this real quick. I think people will enjoy the three names that you've mentioned.
McClung, Sharp, Martin.
Yeah. I think those three young guys have some stuff. I've seen McClung do his thing. Around, I've seen Shaedon Sharpe. I see, you know, but I'm interested to see how it translates to the contest. These are super athletes,
and I think that's the one thing. Asking, again, at minimum, y'all got to finish the dunks. Last year's dunk contest, man, there was just no finishes, and that was the issue.
These guys will finish. Yeah. I think these guys will finish. Yeah, I do.
So
I really
actually,
do.
They
but
have
yeah,
everything
I mean, but you,
the game.
You look at,
like if you can have a great showing as a smaller guy. Named guy at the dunk contest.
McClung is a small
name. No, it's a smaller name. I think you can instantly monetize that, like, you know, just as far as brand awareness, I mean, things like that. But, yeah, I mean, I'm always, my favorite day is always Saturday, although mine is a 3-point contest, so.
I agree. Saturdays are the best day, especially Saturday.
Yeah, we should come to Utah, man. Let's do the VC show live from All Star Weekend. I'll be out there. Let's do the BC show.
Maybe. I might pop up. You never know.
Come on, Manny Brothers, send us.
You never know.
Well, I'll already be there.
Yeah, man. But yeah,
let's end the show before I get us in trouble with our boss.
Right. Peyton be like, man, what y'all talking about over here?
I don't know.
Throwing some ideas around.
Agreeing to do this show, I got an email from Peyton Manning, maybe assistant, I don't know, but it was like, welcome to the team. And I was like, what? So cool. So anyway, it's probably like,
no, he does his own stunts now.
You think he writes his own emails?
Absolutely.
Oh shoot.
Absolutely.
I think he said run, like, welcome to the team. I was like,
oh, that's for sure. Yeah. I can hear him saying too. Well, party people, thank you once again. But listen to the VC show. Roz and I always appreciate you guys listening to our banter and us just go on and on and on about these topics. But we hope you're sitting at home enjoying what we're talking about, having these conversations yourself. We appreciate you. We love, much love. See you next week.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.